Fabulous nerds and gig lovers, I am Kirky, your gig mistress. On tonight's episode, I have with you international drag artist, graphic designer, singer, got a book, tour, everything. Theresa May. Hello, lovely.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, babe. I'm so glad to have you on, honestly. And then I have UK drag artist, Gem of Newcastle, musician, even though she'll say she's not, and he'll say he's not. Velvet Snatch, also known as Sanois. Oh, Candy Snatch, Velcro Snatch, all of the Snatches. How are you doing, lovely?
A plethora of Snatches, I think. I don't know. Is that the collective term, or is it like a band of Snatches? Yeah, band of Snatches. There we go. That's a thing. Yeah, hello. It's strange being here in this context as part of Nerdy Up North, rather than trekking up north or the other stuff. So it's
so now you just
here like
mine.
This. Yeah.
To be rudely talked over by the boisterous mistress of gigs. This one I'm very excited for because this is something very different, and I'm very excited to have you both on. And I respect so much what you do. You know, I find it really empowering and fantastic because I'm quite introverted. I've said this on a few of my podcasts. I'm really introverted. You know, I get very nervous about doing things. So and to see what you do is just, yeah. So I want to ask, the first thing I'm going to ask is, and I'm not going to ask you yet, Velvet, but I want to know why. What made you go, I'm going to do drag?
It's funny you say, I would consider myself quite an introverted person as well. It's funny. Yeah, absolutely. I think drag, it gives you a superpower. That is confidence, and the moment the wig and the lashes are on, I'm a different person. I was just saying, I've just been in Torremolinos, and half of the week in Torremolinos is like a touristy area in Spain where drag is very big. The first half of the week, I was out of drag, not working, and the second half, I was working. I did not talk to anyone in the hotel for the first 3 days, and I'm friends with everyone after the last four I spent in drag. So it's crazy how really Theresa has helped me empower myself and go, and has given me permission to follow all these goals that I had. So I'm very grateful that I started doing drag. As you said, the reason I started doing drag is because, well, I always admired the art of drag from afar as an audience member. But it wasn't until I was 28 and I was living in Newcastle after a few years of really just realizing that I was struggling to connect with people or groups of people. I had friends at work, I had friends at the gym, but nothing really was like super deep. And then when I went out one night and I saw a group of queens, local queens, I thought, ooh, I think these people are my people. I think I could bond with this. I want to know them. They are so cool. They look so awesome. And then I started following one of them. Sunday, who's formerly known as Ill Health. I started following her and on Facebook and everything, and I saw she was entering a competition called Drag Idol, and I thought, oh, there's a drag competition in Newcastle, how fabulous that is. And I thought, you know what, homosexuals have the belief that we can do everything and do it very well, and I thought, you know what, I'm gonna try it. And that's what I did. I started preparing on 2018. And I entered on 2019, and that's how I met Velvet and how I started my drag career. And since then, it's been nonstop. It's crazy.
You have taken off big time.
It's
and
what?
Yes, you were both, was it both the same drag idol? Am I right?
Yeah, we started at the same time, which is kind of absolutely crazy that it was like, you know, our first, yeah, was it our first performances was in the same competition?
Had you performed before?
I'd been on stage before, but you know where it's not really, you're not really performing. You're literally like, you're standing there and you're reacting to someone who is performing. So it was like an extra, and that was kind of like it. But yeah, so it was like my first solo actual, this is something I put together myself and something that I'm doing all myself. Yeah, first time was Drag Idol the year you were in.
Yeah.
And you won it.
It was week one, but we were different weeks. But we started drag on the same stage and on the same competition, which is crazy. It's so cool.
I think it's
cool
a testament. Well, it's a testament to how amazing Theresa is, where it's the fact of like, that was the only year of Drag Idol, I think. Because obviously I do the companion show for Drag Idol now, so I should know all this stuff. But it's the fact of It was the only year when they actually had to split all of the entrants into 2 weeks. They had so many entrants that were so good that they were like, hey, we'll actually have 2 weeks of, like, you know, preliminaries to work out who actually goes into the main competition. And after all that, this bitch was the one who won.
I know. It was a lot.
Oh, fabulous. And you're like, I won.
I know, I did. It was quite crazy to me. I did take every week at the time. I could see myself winning because, again, I'm delusional and I think I can do anything I put my hands into. It's working. But I did take it a week at the time, and it was a very incredible process. And I always encourage people to start doing drag through competitions. Much better than doing gigs for free. I mean, competitions are for free, but you're getting feedback from professionals on the spot. And at the time, I don't know if it's so strong at the moment, but we used to get mentors, and I was lucky to get Penny T, who really took the time to invest in me. As you say, time is precious. And she did really take the time to make sure that I did well every week. And I think everything that I learned and all the values that I learned at the time, I still carry through this day. So it was I learned very valuable lessons through queens who have been working on the scenes forever. And that's always thanks to Drag Idol. So very grateful.
I'm going to come back to that as well. I'm going to come back to that. Velvet, I've got a direct question for you, and you're going to hate us for it. When are you going to win something like?
Probably never. We were just talking about this before, about the... It's very strange for me because I never intend to win. I always just like being there. Like, it's like the weird goal for me is I'd be very annoyed if I'm not in the top. Like, it's that idea of I always like to be in the sort of the top of things, but I'm kind of fine with someone else winning because I just don't have that killer instinct. Because I'm kind of more like, oh, well, I got to, you know, like, I think it was Kate Butch in the recent series of Drag Race UK who pointed out that she got to be in every episode. That's kind of me, where I'm like going, as long as I'm there for every bit of the competition, I'm kind of fine. And like, Drag Idol annoyed me because I didn't make it through to the final. And that is like a big sort of regret of mine of going, oh, it would have been great to not to win, but just to be there at the final and get to show off a bit. But I never try enough. Like but that's why I'm currently that's why I'm currently in the Mixed Drag Great Britain competition, and I'm a finalist there. And it's a bit terrifying because it's Monday the 26th. We're going to find out who wins it. And I'm kind of scared because, like, this is the first time that I really think that I have tried to win. And, you know, when you don't want to try in case you're disappointed, but you're never going to get anywhere if you don't. That's kind of how I feel. I'm working on preparing myself for not winning, but I really want to.
I want you to as well. Sorry, go on, Teresa, you talk.
I was just saying, manifest, you better win. If you don't, if you can't be my friend if you don't win.
Sorry. Oh, no.
Manifest that win. I hear that. I just want to say
it. I have worked hard enough for it. I'm going to say that. Like, it's the sort of thing no one can say that I haven't really put my all into this, because this year has been me pulling out all the stops and being like, what can I do when I really, really try? And like going at like 120%, knowing that I won't need to do it all the time. But like, and it's been good to kind of look back and go, wow, I can do quite a lot when I really try, you know? Sorry.
No, I want to say this, right? And this, I want this on record, right? You're one of my oldest friends. I am so, so proud of you. I'm so proud of everything you do, and I'm so proud of all the effort you have put in. And I just think, even if you don't win, which would be a crime, I won't say that now, I think you have won anyway because you've put in all the effort. You've raised money for charities. It was the Charlie Carter Foundation. I apologise. The other one is... Pride Action North. This has been a big driving factor, and I think this is really important. A really important part of drag is awareness and putting yourself out there and doing things for good, and, you know, raising that standard, which is something Teresa has a song I heard a few weeks ago that was quite empowering, which I want to come back to. But I do want it to be known that I'm really proud of you, regardless, that I think everybody in Native North is really proud of you, and everybody who knows you is proud of you. So, well,
thank you so much.
All the best for it, lovely. Teresa, how, when you said about the competition, because obviously touching on, you know, the nerves that, that Velvet is going through about it. Obviously, you've been in two really big competitions, both of which I watched. If I get these seasons wrong, you can shoot us on the spot. I did have notes. It was season 3 of RuPaul's Drag Race UK. Mm-hmm. Season yes. 2 of RuPaul's Drag Race UK versus the World. Yes.
Yeah. The mouthful. Yes.
How yeah. was it to compete big?
So I think the first time was a little bit more nerve-wracking than the second time. Especially I came from a scene, a small scene in Newcastle. I have not been doing drag for many years. I think I had been doing drag for around 2 years when I was casted on Drag Race. So I was a little baby performer. But I think I had worked very hard for those 2 years to get what I was and create a very cool brand for myself. So when I got there, it was like quite shocking to get through every week and see people like Ella Vadei, who had been in the West End, you know what I mean? See Veronica Green, who had been in season 2, see someone like Victoria Scone. But yeah, it was quite nerve-wracking because I saw myself as this little Spanish immigrant. But I think that charm is what got me through. And just, I think Velvet is very right. I think the excitement of being there was enough to push me every challenge. Sorry. It was enough to push me through every challenge. And I have to say, I it resonates a lot what Velvet is saying about just being happy to be there. Because both times that I've been on Drag Race, I have not seen myself as a winner necessarily. I have seen very early during the filming process who was going to be in the final, and I've been right every time. I knew who the winner of season 3 was going to be on episode 2, and it happened. So I kind of like tapped out the competition and competitivity feeling. I didn't have like that drive, but my drive was to do very well every week and have my little wins, like show my pitch look, be funny, have a funny moment, do Snatch Game. I had all these little victories, like Velvet is saying, like being there every week, and there's things that maybe they don't give you praise for, but they are like little wins that you do for yourself. And that's been both times what I've been focused on, being happy with my own experience and fulfill my own expectations. And then people who know me and people who are a fan and people who follow my career will appreciate those. Like, for example, in UK versus the World, my biggest win was to show my Marge Simpson look.
Yeah. I loved this.
Been part of my drag career since I very much started, and it was so important for me to show that. And now that's just not a local reference, it's an international reference, and everyone knows me for doing March. It's those little things that having the platform helps. So although I have not been very vicious with the competition, I've very much enjoyed being part of it, and it almost it doesn't hurt as much. I think also what you mentioned, that what's her face? Kate Butch. What you mentioned, that Kate Butch said, I was on every episode. I was on almost every episode of my both seasons as well. And I got to show pretty much everything that I brought. So I think that's what's important to me. Maybe if I go back to Drag Race, next time is the third time I'm going to win. So fuck having a good time.
Yeah.
I've had a good time twice. I wouldn't be mad if I don't, but I win. You know what I mean? Next time, I promise everyone watching, next time I'm going for the win. So if I lose, I'll be sore, but I won't. So it'll be fine.
I remember watching them being like that. Oh, because like completely invested. I find I get very invested in everything, and particularly some of the costumes you were coming out in. And there was one where you had like a smoke, it was an owl with the smoke, and it was just this most, hey Zappin, the most incredible like costume. And I was just like, God, it's just brilliant, you know. I mean, what people don't realize is with anybody who watches RuPaul's Drag Race, you know, they have to do these costumes, design them, and think of them. It's not something that it's just given. It's all created by each drag artist. And, you know, there's a huge creative process behind that about anything to do with drag that can't be ignored. I must admit, I think it was about 5 years ago, I was sat sewing a seagull onto a hat for you, wasn't it, Velvet? You know what I mean?
Oh, God, isn't that the number that got me eliminated? I can't remember. I think that was so, the number that got me alone.
Probably was with my swing honey bun, I can tell you that now.
But it's crazy. It's crazy that you bring up like both those things, because A, I want to hear the smoke story again, Chozza, after the nightmare that was with the smoke. But also the owl, like the craziness that you mentioned the bloody owl when it's me and Chozza on the same podcast, because I voiced the owl in the adverts and the story that you did for it.
Yeah, it's crazy how these little things become part of your brand. Because as I said, like March, the peach, all these things were part of my brand. But there's things that going through Drag Race become part of your brand, and the owl was one of them. I've done some social media campaigns for brands where the owl has been part of it. And Velvet, as she said, she voiced it. And we did a short film as well where the owl was voiced. The whole film was voiced by Velvet. It's been very fun. It's very funny with the second time that I brought the owl. Apparently the first time it was the sewing challenge on episode 3 on UK season 3. Apparently the brother of one of the cameramans had a 3D printing machine, and they had done this owl as a test, and the cameraman saw it and was like, oh, we have a challenge, could I take this, do you throw it in the mix? So they were very excited when I made the whole thing about the owl. It was quite a moment for them. So that's exciting to know that I only found that out the second time when I came back, and then I had a full look inspired by the owl that threw smoke. What people think is that was some crazy machinery attached to the scepter with the owl that was throwing smoke. No, it was the most rudimentary invention that we could ever come up with. We did the scepter with the owl in purple, and I hand painted it, and I put it all together with the help of some friends who had like made it the main thing. And then separate in my hand, there was one of these smoke bombs that I bought from Amazon. So it was not even attached to the actual scepter. It was in my hand. I had to wear a glove, and it was burning me all the way through. And
oh, you're kidding.
If I show you the owl now, it's fully burnt in the back, because I had not tested it before, only one time on the show, and it was almost burned. So I couldn't like turn it around or anything. So yeah, people was like, oh, how did you do it? Like, did you? But I was like, no, it was in my hand. And when I walked out, I had to put it on a bucket of water. But the smoke went through the water, and they have to literally kick everyone out of the filming area. It was quite crazy. It was a lot. It was a lot, let me say that.
See, you blew up filming, basically.
I was last. They knew something could happen, so they left me for last, walking the runway.
It's got to be nerve-wracking, though. I mean, it's fantastic career-wise, but it's got to be nerve-wracking coming out on that runway. You know, any stage, but particularly in front of judges, it's got to be nerve-wracking. Surely, introvert-wise, is it that confidence you were saying before, the second that the wig's on, the eyelashes are on, that confidence gets you through it?
Yeah, it's not me anymore. It's Teresa takes over my body and my soul and everything. And I was very focused on really being myself and just interacting how I would interact myself. I must say, for me, it's quite easy to forget there are cameras. I guess there's people who get nervous. I'm an oversharer, as you can see. You ask me a tiny question, I'll go hours about it. So it was easy for me to just forget that there was cameras and to be nervous. There are sometimes where challenges came through, that Snatch Game and things like that. That's where you get a little bit more nervous and you're like, oh no, what's happening? But yeah, other than that, I don't take anyone too seriously, and it didn't really intimidate me to have anyone sitting there. If I'm honest, I was more focused on enjoying myself.
Good. I like that answer. That's good. Maybe this is the problem I have. Every time I go to a drag show, I feel empowered. And this is going to rub off, isn't it? I'm going to be like, nah, I'm not taking anything from anybody tomorrow. This is going to be an entirely powerful thing. Now, Teresa, have been a judge on Drew Paul's Drag Race Season 2, España.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was it weird being a flip? So flipping that from being on the runway to then sitting as a judge, was that not weird completely?
It was very wild. I'll be honest, it was very wild. It was awesome. They called me before season 3 aired. The Meet the Queens was out, and I was officially a Root Girl, the first Spanish Root Girl in history. And they called me and I was like, oh, what? I was like, oh, we want you to be a judge. And I was like, ooh, well, I can't judge past episode 6 because I left on episode 6 and I would feel like a hypocrite. And they were like, yeah, that's fine. We'll put you on episode 6. And I was like, fabulous. it was amazing. It was amazing. It was a great experience. I must say, Supreme Deluxe, the Javis and Anna Locking and the whole team of Drag Race España treated me so well. They did treat me like a queen. It was a very fun experience. It was exhausting to judge, I must say, because it was the ball and there was a lot of queens. So it was a lot of looks to judge and to comment on. It was a lot of fun. The crazy thing I always say, I make this comparison, you know, these images of when two rivers collide together to go into the sea and these waters of different colors, there's a brown water and a blue water and they don't mix. It felt like that with the energy in the room, because I've been on the stage with the queens, the feeling and the energy on the stage is absolutely different to behind that judging panel. Mm-hmm. Everything is quite calm and everything is quite fun. The judges are really there to have fun and see drag and just be part of it, because it's an incredible thing to do. But it's hard to push that energy of tranquility to the contestants and be like, hey, we're all doing this together. I was trying really hard and I could see them nervous, but it's a very difficult thing. So having been in both sides, it's an honor. There's not many queens who get to do that. So I was, yeah, it was great. And I finally got paid to judge people, which I do anyway. So
I love it. Velvet, yourself, you were judge on Drag Idol this year, weren't you?
Yes, that it's kind of crazy because I've been doing the companion show Snatch Talk for 3 years now. It might be more. No, I think it's only 3 years, which is, yeah, crazy. That takes up my February and March. As you know, my February and March are just a crazy panic trying to do it. And I can't do anything else because it's so much work. But no, it was kind of wonderful to kind of get a bit of a reward this year by getting to be a guest judge, well, the guest judge for the semi-finals. And it went down really well. It's something I've always struggled with that I've probably touched on earlier is imposter syndrome. Like I genuinely, no matter how much I do in the world and how much I can actually achieve, I don't believe I deserve any of it. Like I genuinely go, oh, this is the time when they realize actually I'm crap. Actually, I can't do anything. And so it's kind of great to fight the imposter syndrome by being like, being announced as a guest judge and having nobody raise any sort of like, oh, well, they shouldn't be there. Everyone was like, no, that makes sense. And there's something wonderful, like affirming about that, I think. And it was a great experience. It was although it was very difficult. It was the semi-finals are like, you get to decide who gets to the final. And I was like, hang on. Like you're saying, Chozo, with you're getting to decide who gets to go further in the competition than you did. And that's exactly what happened to me. I was like, I was helping decide who got to the final when I didn't. And it's like, going, oh, this is weird.
That's so true. That's crazy.
It's got to be really difficult because for me, the imposter syndrome's huge. And I would find it very difficult to segregate people because I always try and find the good in everyone. And I would be like, but I can't because I like this and I like this about this one. And I like this about this one. I have to ask this, obviously, you obviously find it weird going from obviously RuPaul's Drag Race, being in Drag Idol, judging Drag Idol, both being part of the Newcastle community. Do you find community is vital? Because I've noticed, Teresa, you sell a lot of your stuff on you. You always putting stuff up. So if there's a week you're finished with, you'll say, right, that's up for grabs. And that's really cool because that could be a part of some of them that I was watching going up on. This sounds like I stalk your Instagram. I totally stalk your Instagram. Go up with part of like Drag Race history and stuff like that. Do you think all of that is important to the drag scene?
I think it's vital. I think if we don't have each other's backs, we can't expect the audience and the people who don't necessarily support drag to have our backs. I think the works start in our own home, in our own community, and having each other's back and trying to be inspiring for the people who are coming and being better at supporting who's coming after us and who's going to be the future of the drag scene. I think for me, obviously, being in Drag Idol, I got incredible help and incredible mentors and people like Miss Rory or Penny T or Ophelia have always had time for me. And I've always been very grateful of that. And I've, since my reign from Drag Idol, it was vital for me to not only just wait for the phone to call and give me opportunities, but to use my platform to generate more opportunities. That's why we started working at Billy Bootleggers and with the B-Win parties, and we would have a guest every week. And then from there, we moved on to have a cabaret with a different cast every month from different groups and drag families, not just our friends. And it was very important for me to do that. And it's the only way I could see myself doing drag in a scene. It was being an active part of it. And sadly, obviously, with the amount of work that I've had and with the traveling, I have not been able to be as present and supportive as I could have been going to drag shows like Belvetis with the support that she has for Drag Idol and everything that she does. I wish I had more time, but a way that I found to support the scene is by giving away free drag for queens who had just started, or even selling stuff for a lot cheaper than I got it, things that I don't wear anymore, selling them to queens who can afford it or give it for cheaper for queens who maybe can't. It's been my way of being like, hey, I'm here. I'm here for you and I'm excited for you and I see you and I'm one of you. And yeah, it's just having all these queens and kings coming to my studio and being able to chat to them in a bit more of a relaxed environment than a club or a party. It's been incredible for me, and it's been very inspiring to me to see what they are doing with their drag careers and how they are finding the drag scene. So I think community is very important, and I think people should do that a lot more. We should embrace each other instead of tear each other down, which sometimes some queens do, let's be honest.
I think it's a lot of people are really insecure, especially in the drag scene, and it's that horrible thing because it's toxic. When you know, it's the idea of you want to be in a community where if you fall, someone will catch you. But to do that, you have to be prepared to catch them, even if you're busy, even if you've, you know, done that. And obviously that's what you're doing, and that's what I try and do in the community. But you do get people where, I think when we came to the scene, it was kind of toxic in Newcastle, because it was a lot of people who were like, oh, well, I need all of the gigs, so I can't allow them to get the gigs, so I need to tear them down so that I can get that. And rather than the whole thing of going, well, and now we've got a really sort of progressive sort of scene in Newcastle where people create their own opportunities. If, you know, if they're going, hey, I'm not getting gigs on the scene, then they'll reach out and they'll go to venues off the scene and they'll make opportunities there. They'll put on shows there and whatnot. And so it means that it's kind of spread out all across the region now, which is absolutely wonderful. And that's purely because of people seeing what Cherise is doing and going, hey, I don't need to be at this bar, I don't need to be at this club to be successful, I can do it wherever I want, you know.
I would agree. Yeah.
I think people just fall into the, oh, okay, so these people are successful on the scene, I need to do what they are doing, I need to be at the gigs that they are, and that couldn't be more far from the truth. And I always, when everyone asks me, not everyone, but when I get asked what advice you have for new queens, it's like, sit yourself with a cup of tea and ask yourself what it is you want to do, what it is that fulfills you. We should be doing drag for the audience, not for the other drag queens. You know what I mean? Mm. For other queens to see that you're busy. That's pointless if you're not doing what you enjoy, if you don't have passion for it. So some queens fall into having residencies in bars that they don't enjoy. And instead of like doing things like what Sally does, Sally TM is an incredible queen, and her drag just does not limit to be on the stage. It expands to her illustration and the character that she has. Velvet is the perfect example. She spends more time doing videos and filming content and interviewing people because that's what she's good at and that's what her passion lays. She's a communicator. She spends more time with her podcast in DragCon with Girl Global than on a stage, because that's what she does. And there's no one like Velvet, and she has no competition, just like Sally has no competition when it comes to what she does. And that is that is vital, because if you don't do that, what you end up having on the scene is queens who are carbon copies of other queens, and it's boring. And then you can never pass that queen that inspires you, because she's the best at being herself. If you're trying to copy her, you're not gonna do anything. You know what I mean? And people don't understand this, and people tear each other down, and they get insecure, and then they try to get your gig that you've made for yourself, and it's just like, no, there's space for everyone. So it's important to have each other's back. And it's always bothered me a lot when these toxic behaviors happen, because it's not something that I've motivated, and it's not something, and it's happened to me. It's happened to the best of us, where we become victims of these toxic behaviors with these people. And it's always really, really annoyed me, because it's like, I'm on my own lane. I'm not bothering anyone. Do your own thing. I'll do my own. And I've been successful at it. So maybe take some notes and go ahead and follow your dreams.
I mean, yeah, to continue that, it's the fact of, I thought that I was really lucky that I was sort of doing like so well in the scheme of things. Like, the what I've got to say about Teresa is, like, Teresa's a perfect example of, if you work hard, you can get there, because you are one of the hardest working people I know. Like, you know, ever since we met, you were just like, oh, I'm doing this, then I'm doing this, and my plan for this is this. And, you know, like, as soon as you'd actually won Drag Idol that, like, first, you know, that first year, you were immediately like, oh, cool, what can I use this win to do? And what opportunities can this open up for me? And that's what you need to do. You need to be on the ball. But for me, I've been very kind of laid back, and most of what I do is because people have come to me and given me opportunities, which is rare but amazing. But then it's finding your niche. It's you can't, like Charles was saying, you can't compete at the same game that someone else is doing if that's not you. You can't be like, oh, I'm going to be like a sort of, you know, a dancing diva if that's not you. And I kind of gave up on the rat race very quickly, and then went, hey, I like chatting to people. I've got a, you know, good voice and a good communication. And then just kind of fell into podcasting and fell into interviewing and stuff, and everything spiraled from there. So yeah, find what you're good at, find what you uniquely can bring to the mix of your particular scene, and yeah, make a name for yourself doing it. Don't try to be someone else. Yeah.
I really think you've both had a really positive influence. I mean, if you ask anybody who doesn't have any idea about drag, the first thing they'll probably say is lip sync. That is probably what they'll come to. And both of you shatter that completely. Shatter it. And I think that that is so great and brings so much highlight to what drag is and what it does. And seeing you, I've seen you both perform live, and you're both hilarious, and you both have so many multi skills, and you are both just lovely and funny and clever, and everything you do has meaning. I mean, Teresa, you're not just a drag performer. You sort of almost apologized there for being so good at what you do. You're not stuck locally. You work all over the place. You do, you perform everywhere, and you've worked hard for it. Same for you, Velvet. You've worked hard for it, babe. You've earned it, right? But Teresa, you write songs. You sing, you write songs. You have music, right? And it's not just any music. Some of it is party music with these funky dance songs. And, you know, I'm big on music. Obviously, I run a music podcast, you know, it's one of those things. Some of them are really incredibly powerful and quite touching. You're going to know which track I'm talking about. Can I ask sort of, what drives you musically, Teresa? I want to know this, because I want to know what kind of brings you from drag to then these music tracks, please.
Yeah, I always say I write and I make the music that I like to hear and I listen to. And I don't often have the option, because there's not much out there. I like silly music. I like music that not only empowers, but it gives people a positivity boost. And I think my music does that. I think with Georgia Theresa May, Feeling Fruity, Party in Hell, Pussy Like a Peach, all these songs.
Eat that ass. Sorry, I had to say it. It had to come out.
Eat that ass. they are a positivity boost, and they are songs that I get lots of messages from people like, oh my god, I use this music to train, it really is so much fun, and or I put it in the morning, or I put it in the shower, and it like gets my energy up. It's the I make the music that I like to hear, and I'm again going on. I think drag queens are known for releasing a lot of beach tracks, I like to call them, where I'm a queen, I'm the best, I wear heels and stomp the runway. It's very that, and it's not something that interests me very much.
It's true.
You know what I mean? I was like, yeah, I could do that, but it's not music that necessarily I'm too bothered. I was like, I'm just writing about my pussy being like a peach or eating ass. Or then I went to a more emotional song with Burn a Little Brighter, which is
yes.
a song that I sing to my younger self. People think I sing it to the community, but if you, now that you know, I'm singing it to myself as a kid. If you listen back to it, it takes a completely different turn. So it is this music that I listen to my own music on Spotify every year when the rap comes around. I'm the person that listens to myself the most because I love my music. So yeah, it's quite crazy. I was talking to Sam when I was a local singer. I love him. He was like, no, music is going to become a big part of your career. And I was like, no, I'm going to release Pussy Like a Peach and that's it. I don't have plans to do anything else. And I enjoyed so much the process of the cover, the music video, the song. I just got addicted to it. And it was a great way to express my creativity and develop what the universe that Theresa May lives in. And also I find, I will say it, it's music. It's a great way to stay present. And to stay immortal in a way. Maybe a month when I'm off and I'm not working, maybe not a month, but 2 weeks that I'm off. But people still listen to my music on Spotify. So I'm still performing in their ears, in their cars, in their house, in their parties. I'm still singing that song to all these places and I'm not there. So it's a great way to have Theresa present while maybe I'm too tired. You know what I mean? I don't know. I find
no, You've done so much. You have done. You've been everywhere lately, and you've been performing abroad. And I you know, yeah. This is why I was so grateful you could do this. So I really appreciate it. This, it the stuff you make is bangers. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, you're washing the pots and you're singing "Party in Hell," and yeah. The video for it is just brilliant. For anybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about, I'm not going to spoil it. Just go and watch the video on YouTube or listen to it on Spotify. Go watch the video on YouTube. It's cool as anything. And there is a lot of visuals that you do. Do you find your, obviously, you know, the drag influence, but do you find the visuals influenced from drag, or are they brought from other places? Is there any nerdy influence to some of your visuals? Is what I'm going to ask.
The feeling fruity videos.
Shut up, Velvet.
There is. I started the. I wanted to, especially with Feeling Fruity, there was this PlayStation 1 game reference for sure, which I loved, and we're like, oh, this is the perfect song for something like that, and just the fact that again I get to support my friends somehow, like psoriasis, a queen who I met during the viewing parties and now doesn't do drag so much but still doing animation, the fact that I get to give her such a big job like doing a music video, it's quite wild, and I love that I know artists who are so talented who can make my crazy ideas a reality, because then she also did the Chocho Theresa May music video, which is a Mario Kart reference mixed with the same PlayStation style, and it's just me and local queens from Valencia. Local queens from Valencia, because I have a version which is with Rue Girls from Drag Race España, but I haven't released that one. But just the fact that I get to make all these ideas, again, my drag does not end with a look or a dress. It expands to my music. It expands to my music videos. And that's why Party in Hell, it's a great music video to watch if people haven't, because it's twisted, it's clever, it's fun, it's political, it has a great narrative. I love to just, it's like some veins that expand in different areas, and I get to conquer different spaces through the idea of who Theresa May is. So I love music. It's my newfound passion, and I love it. Yeah,
and don't stop loving it. It's great. I mean, I'm a metalhead and I still wash the pots to party in hell. Do you know what I mean? It's one of those things. It's so good and it's so funky. And I believe music should be for everybody. I don't believe in putting it into a, the same with my podcast. I cover gigs, I cover shows, I cover what people do. I think music should be a creative output, whether, you know, whatever that sounds like, whether it's reggae, whether it comes out as party music, whether it comes out as ambient. Come into that in a minute, Velvet, or whether it comes out into whatever. But it's this whole kind of thing, the tunes. I mean, Mango Loco as well. I love Mango Loco. It's just such a cool tune. And,
I don't perform that one a lot. I don't know why. I think I should perform it more. I get that the comment that was like, oh, you never do Mango Loco. I'm going to have to start doing it a bit more.
Yes. Yes, you are. Yes, you are, Teresa. Yes, you are. I do love it. I love the videos. I love everything you do. And I think writing, is writing, just a quick one with this one, is writing hard or does it just come naturally? Some people find it comes naturally.
I have a great team that helps me with the writing, I must say. Especially English is not my first language. Yes. So I always, which was like a piece, for example, it was mostly me, but feeling fruity, big part of it was my team, which is Eden Hunter and Katie Ray, are the people who I've been working with for my latest music and the whole EP of Party in Hell. So especially, for example, the process is different for every song. There's times where I don't have time and I'm like, I give them a very specific brief and a whole line or a whole paragraph of lyrics that I'd like, and then they help me develop it. But for example, it was a beautiful process for Burn a Little Brighter, which a song like that would have not made any sense if I had not had a big part on the writing process, and because it had to come from myself. And I remember the meetings and the video calls with them writing the song. There were so many tears when the lyrics and the thoughts that I had in my head were becoming a song, and the music was being added to it. I have a great team again. I'm so grateful that I get to work with such incredible artists and materialize the crazy ideas that I have in my head. So yeah, it's been fabulous. It is hard to write. Yeah. And this show, the one that I'm touring in September, the Teresa May show, I have written fully by myself. And it's been a challenge, but I went away for 2 weeks and was like, I'm going to come back from this trip with a tour, with a show written. And yeah, it was a challenge, but we always race to the occasion.
I want to talk about the show in a minute. I've got one question for Velvet. Velvet, are you going to do any more music, babe?
Hilariously enough, it's all there planned. Like the annoying thing is, like, this is, I am getting kind of old now, which is a bit scary, but it's my 40th year on this planet this year. So I had my 40th birthday earlier in the year. And my mission for this year was just to kind of test my boundaries and be like, hey, what can I actually achieve? Like, what, you know, to kind of show that I'm not past it in a kind of weird way. And so basically I was like, hey, I'm going to release another album. And obviously I can't, you know, because I've had a couple of albums that have been on the shelf for a while and just like, you know, never got around to releasing them because it's like, oh, well, and as soon as I start thinking about releasing them, I just start playing around with them and then just never get anywhere. And so I have one fully planned to go out, but then being part of Mixed Drag this year has just knocked everything askew because the idea for it, because it's 24 tracks long. It's 24 tracks long. It's an ambient horror album. Yeah, what? Ambient horror album. It's 24 tracks long. So the idea was to release it as 4 separate EPs of about sort of 5-6 tracks each. And then over the course of June, July, August, September, and then release the full album as a whole with some bonus tracks in between sections in October. Yeah, it's crazy. It's not quite that good, but yeah. And then basically it got to like June and I was like, yeah, it's still going to happen. And further in June, I was like, it's totally going to happen. And then went, yeah, it's not happening. And
next year.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I wanted to get it done this year, but next year, because it's also the, like, you know, you'll agree with this, Trouser, it's giving it the limelight it deserves. You don't want to just chuck it out there and be like, oh, let's see if anyone listens. I kind of really want to be in a place where I have the time to kind of release it. And then even though it's ambient music, because this is the hilarious thing, I was sitting down with people being like, okay, so this is what we're going to do. And they're like, could we release a single? And they're like, and I'm like, No, there is nothing on this album that would be a single. It's just too obscure. It's basically very video game ambient music. But the idea was to maybe make some music videos that were sort of video game related, but more dealing with cosplayers and whatnot, to get lots of people I know who do cosplay, a lot of drag artists and whatnot, to basically do these kind of horror stories, like live action sort of horror, silent horror stories, but with the music for a track as the soundtrack to it. And I was like, oh, that'd be amazing. That's going to take more time than I probably have. So hopefully next year we'll get to do one or two of them.
A lot. So yes.
Yes.
You've wrote four albums is what I get. See, I can talk to you like this because you're my friend and you're not just... You've wrote four albums, basically, that you've decided you're just going to mash into one. If anybody wants to know Velvet's nerdy influences, look at the poster on the wall in the background. That'll give you everything you need to know right there. Okay. And I'm not going to tell you about the time me and Velvet went on holiday to write an album for a synthwave band that we started in 2009. I never finished. I never did anything with. And we went to Yorkshire, St. Ives, Yorkshire. And I'm just going to leave it like that.
I'm never going to live this down, am I? Ever? basically, Chaza. No, you tell the story, Kirsty.
No, you tell it.
When you get these offers where it's sort of like, where it goes, hey, you can get a holiday for like cheap or whatever. I was like, oh, that sounds great. St. Ives. Oh yeah. It's like a 2-person holiday there for like sort of 400 quid for like a week or whatever. That's fine. That's in Yorkshire. Right. And so I booked it and then was like, Kirsty, we're going to go on holiday to St. Ives. And she was like, that's literally the other end of the country. That's literally Cornwall. Like, you know, she was like, that's like a 16-hour drive or something. What was it? It was something insane. Like,
it was 12 and a half hours. We made it to Truro before I died and my car overheated because I was the only driver. So we had to stop in a B&B in Truro before we could move on to St. Ives. Luckily, we went down the day before because I was like, I don't think my car's going to make it, babe. We're going to have to take a break. So we stayed in Truro, went to Games Workshop, got very drunk, and then drove on to St. Ives the next day.
What on earth?
It was one of these bizarre things of, you know, well, I've bought this holiday and I don't think I can refund it. So we're just going to have to find a way to get to the other side of the country.
We did it. It was good. We had jam tarts and lobsters. It was fantastic. Not real lobsters. We had like a teddy lobster that went with us. It was fine. Anyway,
finish any songs? I can't.
No.
I think we worked on a couple of them. There's a couple of them that we worked on, but I don't think we actually got any work done. So it was a bit of a redundant trip, really.
It was me, Velvet, and a cog, and a lot of surfing. So coming back to this, because we're hijacking this, Teresa, your tour, the tour that you have wrote and published, tell me about it. Tell me what it takes to make this happen, because we have two dates up north as well.
For the first time ever, I'm gonna be doing my first solo tour all across the UK. It's 10 dates. It's in theaters, and it's the first show that I have also written. I've written sets for my own self, but that's been like half an hour, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. This is the first time that I have a fully fleshed theater show that is just going to be me with a support act every city that I'm on. And it has everything that I've been doing and I'm known for through these years since I started. It has the comedy side. I've written stand up, which I'm very excited about, and I do a lot of it in Spain on the TV. A TV show where I do stand up has just been released in Spain, but I haven't got to do it so much here, more than in very, very specific occasions. So it has stand up comedy. It has an incredible story. It has all my original music. It has one lip sync number only. Everything else is live music. Well, live as in me singing, obviously. We don't have a budget for an orchestra, sadly. It has incredible visuals that my sister Sally TM, an incredible local queen, has done. It has the costumes, the devil costumes that I wore on Drag Race UK. And it tells the story. Oh, Velvet, we didn't talk about this because we were talking about the tour earlier, but the whole story, it's based around my talent show on the versus the World season 2. And the story is, I just died. Theresa May just died on stage, and I wake up in hell, and I try to figure out why. Why am I in hell? I thought I was going to go to heaven. I think I've been a great person. Where did it all go wrong? So this story gives me the chance to tell stories about my life and where everything went wrong or didn't, and find out if at the end of the show I'll stay in hell or I'll go to heaven. And through all the way to do that, to get there, we're going to tell some fun stories. Again, incredible music, incredible guests, and some little cameos in the shape of video from some really close friends. So it's everything that I've been doing for all these years, but finally it's in the shape of a show. And if you for anyone who hasn't seen me before, I think it's going to be a very fun show to watch, because it has color and movement, so they love it. And for everyone who's seen me from the beginning or since Drag Race, it's the perfect show to see me do everything that I love and do it well. So I'm just very excited. And as you said, we do have 2 dates in Newcastle and Stockton. And I'm just thrilled to be back up north doing these shows. I'm very excited for it. I have the script here, which I've been studying, I've been getting familiar with before tech rehearsals start next week, so my team can get all the quotes and all the cues and everything that they need to have, to all the sound effects and all the videos and everything that's going to be happening. So I'm very proud. This was 10 cities in the UK. It was a big goal of mine, and I'm just very excited for it. So can't wait to show it to the world, and for you two to come over and see it as well.
Oh yes, totally excited. It's really important. I think obviously I've got the Phoenix Theatre, and then I've got Newcastle Gosford Civic Centre on the 19th September, Stockton Montes, the 26th Phoenix Theatre, my apologies, that's someone else. So 19th September, Newcastle Gosford Civic Centre. You wouldn't know where Gosforth was, would you, Velvet?
And I know Stockton where Gosforth is.
Gosforth. And then Stockton-upon-Tees, 26th of September.
Yes.
I always say this on every one of my podcasts, and it is something regardless of the show. My podcasts are aimed at not just music. They are aimed at gigs. That is why it is called Gigs Up North, my loves. Mm-hmm. Shows, drag, showgirls, Babes in the Crypt, everything like that, right? Buy tickets, buy them early. Don't wait till the last few minutes. Don't wait until the doors are closed. Oh, I'm just going to rock up on the night, unless you have a genuine reason, right? Get those tickets. Those tickets mean that these artists can put these shows on. It means they have the ability to say, I know this is going to work and I've got seats filled and I am going to have a great night. Mm-hmm. Don't leave it, babes. It's really important. It shows you support these artists, and, you know, there is nothing you can do more than buy merchandise, buy tickets, go and see them live, go and show them when they show up. Because if you don't do that, these artists can't afford to do it. Everything these artists do is themselves. You know, acts like, particularly, I'm going to know about the showgirls as well, they spend hours rhinestoning their own costumes. You'll do the same. Both queens, rhinestoning costumes, building stuff, sewing stuff. I remember bumping into you, Teresa, and you had this amazing red dress on. It was like red with black spots on. And you just turned and you went, I made this tonight. And I was like, you are joking me. Like, I can't even sew like a seam. If I need to hem a pair of pants, that's it, I'm done for. And there's you in this amazing dress. Don't underestimate what goes into these shows, the writing of it, the thinking, the planning, the costumes, the even just the production side of it, and hiring people in, stage crew, stuff like that. Excuse me if that's a big waffle, but my shows are designed to highlight all of this. It's not just somebody walking out on a stage and going, oh, well, it's me on stage. There's a huge, huge amount of work, forethought, money that goes into this. So buy those tickets. I'll put the dates and the links in the bottom of this video. The same, if you can, to Annick Gardens on Monday, the bank holiday Monday. Go and see MX Drag. Go vote for our Velvet. War Velvet. Because I've been War teaching Velvet in Sweden and America how to speak Geordie. I want those dates. I'll put those dates in the bottom for Teresa's upcoming show. I want to see it. It's going to be amazing. Please go see it. Go support. What you do is so different, and you have challenged what drag is. In my opinion, obviously learning about it and watching somebody I really care about go from not performing drag and go through it and performing drag in so many different ways and learning, it kind of opens your eyes as to how complex but how amazing it is and how empowering. And your songs, Teresa, particularly as you've mentioned it a few times, I have got it written down, Burn a Little Brighter, it touched so deep because there is so much hate out there and there is so much negativity, and there shouldn't be. It's so positive. And, you know, you should appreciate a drag show as much as you appreciate a metal show. It shouldn't be a case of one or the other. It should be loving every performance you can get your hands on and enjoying that positivity and enjoying what is to there to be shown. Because I've said it before and I'll say it again, every time I have been to a drag show, I have come out a better person and I have thought, maybe I can just put that makeup on that way or wear my lippy a bit better or put that shoes on. Or, I mean, I'm never going to wear heels. That's just a no-no. But, you know, the whole thing. Anyway, I'm hijacking. So you've got your tour coming up. You're so excited about it. Honestly, like, I assume you've put everything into this.
I have. I really have. It's been my project for the year. Going on UK versus the World Season 2, I thought, okay, what am I going to get out of this? Because winning is one thing, but it's most of the time it's not up to you. So I was like, I need my own win. What do I want from this? I want my own show. What is the show going to be? It's going to be around my EP, which is my first EP, Party in Hell, which is, again, available on Spotify and everywhere. I was like, I want a show around this. Can we make this happen? Talk to my agent. We can make this happen. Okay, let's do the show. And then this is what I'm going to get. So all the outfits that I made for the show were already being thought of for my own tour. So yeah, very proud of. I'm really excited for people. It's mostly, especially up north, it's more about an act of being grateful for the incredible support that I got through the years, that it really has got me where I am. And just show them, look, your support has paid off. This is me now. I'm not doing a 3-minute number on a stage, shaky, nervous and naive. I'm a full-grown artist and I'm doing this as a job full-time, and I'm touring the UK with my own show, and there's so much pride in that, and I am so excited. I'm past the nervousness. I'm just excited to start and just get it out of the way and see, especially first night, see the reaction of the people, how it happens, and see what works, and just for everyone to see the visuals. And you know, when you come back from holiday and you want to show everyone what you've done, I'm kind of like that. I'm just like, oh, I want to show everyone what I have. And that's it. I think that's why people should get tickets, because
I agree. Links will be down below. Please do go and see. I think there's too much gone into all of this, and I think this is the main thing I see with drag. Too much goes into it. It's so loved, and so much thought and so much planning and so many things and so many ideas and months and months and months and years of planning goes into this. It's not just I'm just going to jump on stage and do a quick lip sync and then that's it, I'm off, see you later. It's far, far more in depth, and it's the same. Go on.
Well, I think, what is it? It's interesting that we have Teresa here, because it's the fact of, like, you were, Teresa, you were one of the ones who very much campaigned for decent wages for drag queens in Newcastle. Like, one of your platforms when, you know, you started was the idea of making sure that venues paid their drag queens properly, because they had far too many going, hey, do you want a stage to perform on? Hey, come along and do it for free. And Teresa is one of the ones being sort of like, no, if they're going to perform on stage, they're not free entertainment for you. You need to pay them, because people don't take into account the fact of all the time making the number that you're performing, all the hours getting into makeup before you turn up. It's not just when you get through the door, that's when the clock starts. It's like, no, this was like 2 hours, 3 hours of makeup and a bloody taxi ride to get here. You know, the clock has already started. And yeah, and venues need to appreciate that. And I think the audience needs to appreciate that. The same with a band. It's, you don't just pick up a guitar and get on stage and then go, oh, well, now you start working. It's, yeah.
Yeah.
I always have to mention one of my favorites, Priest. They did 116 shows in 1 year. 116 shows. They lived on a tour bus for practically a year, right? you know, it's a guy, one guy who writes the whole thing, one robot that writes the whole thing, you know, and, you know, it's just insane. The music industry and the drag industry, they cross over. There's no difference in performing and campaigning for fair rights and campaigning for fair money is right, because people will always give you that. I'm going to say, people always give that bullshit of, it's for exposure, babes. You should just do it for exposure. Well, exposure ain't going to feed me or pay my bills or pay for the costume that I've made. I mean, for the first time this year, I tried drag makeup. It was the first attempt I have ever done. It was
That was for my fundraiser, wasn't it?
It was for your fundraiser, and I did a shit job. It was absolutely terrible. I basically just plastered myself into a rainbow. It is hard. Don't underestimate it. I can put slap on in 5 minutes because I've been doing this since I was like 15. But if I have to change it in any way, shape, or form, I'm done for. And I remember, I wasn't going to bring this up, but I am. I remember a quick video where you forgot your makeup, Teresa, and you had to go and rebuy it all.
It was horrible. I spent over £400 on makeup. I forgot it. And what do you do? A queen without her makeup, in my case, is a man. So it's not very well. I had to run around London buying a new whole set of makeup. And yeah, it was £400 that I spent with Ubers and all the shop. And that was me buying cheap stuff. It was wild. It was a lot. It was stressful. But yeah, these things happened. But it was a good night. Show must go on.
The show must go on indeed, yes. Don't underestimate the cost of makeup in any way, shape, or form.
Hey, it's crazy how quickly you get through it. Like, it's the sort of thing of, like, you know, when I started, I wasn't using that much makeup. And I was like, oh, I don't know why it's so expensive. And now I'm literally, I just have drawers full of, like, pan sticks and, like, drawers full of, like, glues and whatnot and, like, eyeliners, being like, yeah, I will get through this in a month or two. And it's kind of scary when you realize, wow, this is something that women have to do because society expects it of them. The idea of this crazy cost that society puts on people, that me and Teresa can experience being drag queens, but that is expected of a lot of women. And yeah, it's that insight into the disservice society does to women, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and especially with Velvet, I mean, her forehead ends in her butt crack. So it uses a lot of foundation.
That's it.
I must admit, I had to borrow. I mean, I can feel safe in saying this, that I am boy me most of the time. I tend to not wear makeup. I tend to wear a lot of, you know, just plain t-shirts and stuff like that. I don't go into any of it. I had to borrow makeup off Velvet for Velvet's party. I had to go, can I borrow some eyeshadow palettes? Because I literally have what I wear. If I wear makeup, it's the same lip, the same eyeshadow, the same eyelash. It's just, I've got six things in my bag and that's it. Whereas I was like, please, please lend me something that's not just black eyeliner and red eyeshadow, please. So, you know, I think there is a societal perception and I think it is broken as well with drag. And I think it's really important that that's brought to attention. I've got two more questions left because I keep you both far too... I always do this. I keep everybody far too long. Yak, 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 yak.
You're good.
I talk too much. That's my problem. First thing, if money was no object and you could do anything you wanted to, what costume would you do? What dress, what style, what would you do?
Gosh. It wouldn't end. If I had no budget and money was not an issue, I would have a full-on Broadway production for my show. I would have a crazy stage with dancers, with a live orchestra, with guests, and then costume-wise, well, I would go with the same theme, but even crazier, with more reveals and new costumes for like Taylor Swift, different costumes for every show. And every meet and greet, so the fans would get to see different things in every show. I don't know, I would go absolutely bonkers. I would bring a team to do my makeup. I would bring a team to take care of my wigs. I would hire a full-on fucking bus. I don't know, don't get me started. This would be a production. It would be great. What about Velvet?
It's really strange. Like, so Kirsty, what's the question? The question is,
if you had nobody who wasn't listening, anything. If you had, I mean, anything, costume, outfit, what would you do? If money was no object and you could do anything with your drag, what would you do?
You know what? There's two things. It was quite bizarre you mentioned this in terms of outfit, because I've had like a dream of an outfit for like a couple of years now that ties in all of my nerdy hobbies. Because since I was a kid, I've always wanted, because I'm a massive Warhammer nerd, as a lot of people who know me will know. And one of the things that has already always stayed rent-free in my mind is a character called a Gene Stealer Magus, who was basically like he's basically like a bald alien hybrid type creature, but also a priest. And, you know, and it's basically, and I never knew when I was a kid that I was going to go bald, but like someone mentioned to me the other day, randomly after one of my fundraisers, they came to me and said, hey, I make props for cosplay and stuff. You know, is there anything you need for your drag? Because I can connect you to like various people. And we mentioned this idea and he was like, oh, I could totally help you make that crazy outfit, because it's basically an outfit with a huge collar, you have a huge staff and whatnot. And it's, yeah. And we were like, wow, that's actually going to become a reality. But it doesn't really answer your question, because that's something that is totally plausible for us to do with a very small budget, but that I never really expected would ever be realized.
Velvet would get the same outfit in all different colors. That's what
it's really bad. Like, I went to Opium, my wonderful favorite designer, Christopher Niari, who's in Newcastle, who's done a lot of work for both of us, and basically just said, hey, can I have the red dress that I have, but in purple? And they're like, do you want something new and exciting? And I'm like,
nah.
Maybe next week, you know? And it's so lazy of me, but I'm like, I love this dress so much. I just want it in different colours.
This is the dress we're talking about. I'm going to drop this in. This is the dress we're talking about that you took to Vegas with you and then hunted down Terry Farrell for, I have to wear this dress around Terry Farrell. Am I right? Is this the dress?
The dress I'm talking about is the one on my business card that I wear for Snatch Talk.
Oh, the red
that
one.
Dress, yeah. So we're getting that in purple, which is quite good. But the dress you're talking about, the purple, being the merciless dress. Oh, you've got the business card there. The purple dress that I've overused massively because I'm so in love with it. But yes, I got to meet one of my heroes, who is one of my favorite Star Trek actresses, or actors, I suppose. And basically, like, I got really upset because I missed the meet and greet with them when I was wearing the outfit that I wanted to meet them in, and had like a really childish moment. You know, when you get a moment where you're just like, oh, I'm really, you know, like, you know, and you're just like, it's not the end of the world, but you know, and you're kind of annoyed. And then managed to actually bump into her. Like, a friend that I'd made at the convention messaged me saying, she's in the bar, you know, kind of thing. So I came over, managed to speak to her. And yeah, I had a full-on conversation, got to get photos with her in the outfit and stuff. And it was, it was a dream come true, I think, for a massive nerd like me.
Fantastic.
I admire both of you, the stuff that you wear and the costumes and the dresses and stuff. I am not a particularly feminine lady. I like boots and big skirts and long skirts and short skirts and something that covers everything, because that's just what I am. And I think when I see, I mean, I turned up to a show in Doc Martens and some leather pants, and you were both wearing fabulous dresses. And I was like, wow, I feel massively underdressed here. I am so grateful to have you both on, and you are both amazing. And honestly, you know, I appreciate everything you do. Before I wrap this up, because I've kept you talking far too long, and I say that every episode, I have a question that I ask everybody. Is there anything you want to ask me with an open and honest answer? And yeah, try to be kind.
What's your Greg's order?
What's my Greg's order? Oh my God. So I have, usually if I go into Greg's, because I usually have my little man with me, my little boy. So we usually get a sausage roll for him and a box of wedges. And I usually get a box of wedges and whatever vegan offering they have on at the time. Not because I'm vegan, because I'm severely allergic to lots of food. And if I eat anything, I'll generally die. So whatever vegan offering they've got in, a box of wedges, another box of wedges, a sausage roll, and maybe a cup of tea with soya milk and orange juice.
Love that. Love that.
Perfect. What's yours? I have to ask.
It's always been the vegan. Well, not always. Since before the vegan sausage roll, it was the normal sausage roll. But since they released the vegan sausage roll, I really like it. I think I prefer it. And when Christmas comes around, obviously I get the festive bake. I love it. I love it. Yeah. I love it. I'm tired of wedges and a green tea. That's me because I'm healthy. I'm a body queen apparently, and I get the green tea because because the sausage roll is not gonna it's not enough. That's what I do normally. Oh yeah, and a dip of mayo for the wedges.
Green tea undoes all sins. Don't forget that.
I know. What about you, Velvet?
Oh, mine is actually whenever I go to Greg's, it's always in the morning, so I always end up getting a sausage and omelette sandwich. Mm-hmm. And a sausage and bean melt for later.
That's very thoughtful. I sometimes do that. It's like, I'll be hungry later. I'll get something else. All
right. I'm notorious for not eating, like not taking dinner. So basically I'll just be working away or whatever and be like, wait a minute, when was the last time I ate? Oh, okay. So it's kind of nice to always have something there that you don't need to cook, you know, so just kind of having something like, oh well, I just pop that in the air fryer or something for a couple of minutes.
I'll just stuff that in my face now, that's it.
That's something else, Kirsty.
Oh, you used my Christian name as well. Oh, Velvet.
Sorry, Kirky. It's so different. we've masked that successfully.
Velvet, you didn't answer me question. What do you want to ask us? Anything, even challenges.
What I'm going to do, I'm going to challenge you on video, okay? I want to see you just smash a pile of grapes. Just smash a pile of grapes with your fist. It doesn't need to be now. Sometime after this, okay? I want to see a reel of you with a bunch of grapes just smashing them. Like, all of your anger, all of your frustration, being like, that's for not getting me that pony, you know, like proper, you know, Malibu Barbie rage with these grapes. That's what I want to see.
The Gigs Up North Instagram's going to look very weird with just a bunch of smashed grapes on it, but I'm down.
This is how wine is made. Kirky's rage wine.
When you run out of wine in the house, bosh.
Okay,
I'm down. Honestly, thank you so much. So I want to recap. Please go see Teresa. I want these sold out. I want both the Northeast lots sold out. It's deserved. Too much effort goes into the drag scene that is not known and not seen and not appreciated. So behave yourselves and go buy a bloody ticket. All right?
Thank you, baby. Appreciate it.
You're so welcome, my darling. If you get a chance, this is out on Thursday. This is before Annick Castle. If you get to go to Annick Garden, go see the Gay Day at Annick Garden. Please support our Velvet. While Velvet is in the final leg, if you miss it, please watch out for Velvet or Teresa at any of the local shows, any shows at all. You go see them. You support them. Go speak to them. They're lovely in person. I mean, I'm going to say that, aren't I? Yeah, pays later. Please support your drag scene. What the drag scene creates is something that cannot be replaced. You can have shows anytime, but this cannot be replaced. And I promise you, you will walk out of any drag show feeling $1 million, like you can do anything because it is infectious. So thank you so much for giving me your time. Thank you for giving me, you both work so goddamn hard to give me this time. It is truly appreciated. So don't think I take it lightly. Please support them. I do as much as I can. Much love. Is there anything you want to say before I do my shitty little ending?
Velvet, if you don't win on Monday, I'm blocking you. Bye.
Hey, I get to be added to the prestigious block list. I'm excited for this.
I'm on Pokemon Go, so I'll probably get blocked from that now after this interview.
No, thanks so much for having us, Kirky.
Thank you for giving me the time.
Appreciate it.
Honestly, both of you. Now, behave, be good. If you can't behave, don't get caught. Over and out. Gigs Up North. All right?